to Anime Death Spiral, the only anime podcast coming to you Friday night live at the Laugh Factory. Here we are once again. Let's give it up for the comedians, folks.
Have you heard what these clowns in Congress have been doing?
Oh.
What a bunch of clowns.
Hey, did you see that new pop singer? Man, kid, what are the kids wearing these days? Am I right?
It's all just sounds now. You can't even dance to it anymore.
They got their bleeps and bloops and buzzes and whirs, but what happened to a good old-fashioned guitar, folks? Come on.
They're saying so many curse words these days, some I don't even know the meanings of. I mean, come on. Can't we keep it civil, people?
Gotta go look at an urban dictionary just to figure out what your son's talking to you about. Hey, come on, folks, am I right?
And now we're gonna put on a record from the Eagles about fucking a 14-year-old.
Oh god. Actually, that kind of segues somewhat perfectly into my first thing that I wanted to talk about.
Yeah, you know, all that classic rock shit. Half those songs are about fucking 14-year-old girls.
Oh,
whenever,
man,
somebody tells me they're into classic rock, that's side-eye.
You're like, oh, really? You like Aerosmith?
What's that Skynyrd song that was like, what's your name, little girl?
You know, it's a bit sus. It's a bit suspicious once you go back and think on it. But then again, like, Jimmy Page was just straight up, like, fucking 14-year-olds out in the open and no one gave a shit at the time.
No one gave a shit. No one gave a shit at all. That's what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. It could be any... Hey, David Bowie. You're probably thinking of David Bowie.
I probably am, because I love talking about how David Bowie was definitely a pedophile. I do love talking about that.
Oh, man.
Because, see, he's the one that got a pass. I always did. I never understood that. Why is he the one guy that gets a pass?
I think it's because he was...
It was the eyes thing?
Well, it was the eyes thing. You know, it made him very intimidating, like a comic book villain or a Bond villain. You did not want to mess with David Bowie. But I think part of it, and this is just me kind of talking shit, so disregard all of it. But, like, could it be because of his generally flamboyant and somewhat effeminate persona that he put on?
It does make you wonder about his strange popularity in anime and manga.
And Zoolander.
He does show up in anime and manga a lot. I mean, not as himself, but as, you know, homages.
Oh, well, sure. I mean, the biggest, the most, you know, on-the-nose example is Griffith from Berserk. He's a David Bowie.
There might be a little Bowie in there. I was thinking more
from,
like,
the Pale White Duke era.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking more like, you know, there are, like, characters that'll show up as, like, bad guys in Fist of the North Star or whatever who just have the Thunderbolt makeup. A lot of 80s manga will have a guy who is David Bowie. He's got the heterochromia and the sort of, like, European noble kind of, like, look to him. It's got the hair. I wish I could give you one concrete example.
I mean, there would be no JoJo aesthetic without David Bowie. I think we can agree on that.
Oh, for sure. And the way that Araki has transitioned from the biggest men you've ever seen to kind of the twinkie archetype, I think definitely exposes, like, where he's at.
I mean, the actual example, like, obvious example is Kira from Diamond is Unbreakable. He's
David
Bowie.
Very Bowie. Yeah, he's absolutely Bowie.
He's super Bowie. Literally
super Bowie. Even though his stands are named after Queen songs.
Well, Another One Bites the Dust is a Queen song, but...
And Killer Queen.
Oh, God, what was the duet song that he did with Queen, Bowie?
Under Pressure?
Under Pressure, yeah. Wasn't that one of Kira's stands moves in Diamond is Unbreakable?
It probably was.
I'm pretty sure one of his moves was called Under Pressure.
Yeah. Kira's was confusing because his stand is, like, the only one that, like, evolved into another stand, except for that little shorties, who's specifically his only ability was evolving. I always forget that dude's name. I hated that little guy so much. What was that kid's name?
Koichi? Is that?
Koichi, yes.
Yeah, Koichi.
Koichi. I hate Koichi.
Yeah, he...
Why do we got to deal with Koichi? He sucks.
You know, sometimes you just need a little short guy. I feel about the same for Koichi as I do as the little baseball kid from season 6.
Oh, from Jolene?
Yeah.
You don't like Little Baseball Kid? I like Little Baseball Kid more.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's okay. He kind of like mostly serves as a deus ex machina to get people out of jams because his entire stand ability is just having a pocket dimension where he disappears to for large swaths of the story. Basically, whenever he's not needed, he's just, it's like his ability, his superpower is to hide from the narrative until needed.
Yeah, it's cool. You know, if you're going to do that, like, just do it as blatantly as possible. That's what I think.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. So one
you
thing.
Wanted, wait, you wanted to go back to pedophiles for something?
Well, not so much that. I wanted
wait,
to get
well,
your
what's
opinion
it?
On something that I think that maybe I need to work out my own feelings about.
Oh, God.
So recently, I was in Seattle and I saw advertisements for a Studio Ghibli themed burlesque show. And my immediate response was like, oh, I don't like that. And I had to examine why that was my first inclination. And I don't like using this word. I don't think it really fits what I'm trying to go for. And it's like loaded in its own right. But Studio Ghibli movies have a certain, and I really feel gross saying this, but like purity to them that I don't think.
Purity?
I know. And I don't like saying it that way, but like, what else could I say? They have a earnestness, a, you know, not innocence. Definitely not innocence, because they deal with a lot of mature themes all the time, but a certain, like, okay, it doesn't lend itself to the camp and parody that I think is inherent to doing like a burlesque act. And it made me feel kind of like it made me feel like an old crank. I'm like, oh, they shouldn't be doing that. The kids' movies.
I mean, obviously, you know my stance, which is they shouldn't be doing it at all. Burlesque is like dork ass loser shit.
Burlesque is like maybe not even a step up. It is an adjacent step over from steampunk. It does not make you cool.
It is very steampunk coded to me. It's very much like drama kids who want to feel a little bit more comfortable, like doing sexual acts in public, but not anything cool, just burlesque.
Not anything cool. Hey, man, do you see that stripper's tits? That was wicked awesome.
Burlesque is the improv comedy of stripping. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I get it.
Yeah, it's like, you only go if like your friends in a Herald group and they're like, we need to fill out the crowd. We have a Wednesday afternoon show and we need some people to come.
Listen, we told the bar owner that we would draw in a crowd. He's giving us a deal on the space. So like, can you do me a favor?
I think there are layers to this. One of them being that obviously like Ghibli exploitation is huge right now.
Yes.
Which sucks.
You know, that was part of it, because in the wake of the AI, you know, Ghibliification debate, whatever you want to call it.
Tragedy.
Yeah, tragedy. I felt it was a bit crass, but the main part of it is that I feel like Studio Ghibli movies, A, you know, are mostly centered around children, which makes it kind of weird if you're doing a sexualized act, say, in cosplay as a child. And then second, they do have a certain, like, wholesomeness, earnestness to them. That
some of them
sure, some of them are silly, some of them is a fun time, you know.
Some of them have Tokyo firebombs in them.
Yeah. A couple of them do, actually.
Couple of them.
Yeah
More than one.
So, well, that's what I'm saying. It's when the type of person I think of as being enthusiastically into and participating in a Ghibli themed burlesque act is maybe not the person that is going to take into consideration the entire Ghibli catalog, and I'm pretty sure when they say it's Ghibli themed, they are exclusively meaning the most popular Hayao Miyazaki films.
Well, yeah, obviously.
I'm envisioning probably a lot of Spirited Away acts, which is kind of like fucked up in its own right.
Oh, it's going to be Totoro's and No Faces. You know, if they're bold, I would do the spider arms guy.
I mean,
you should definitely do that.
Again, Spirited Away feels weird because the point of the movie itself is a critique of like the media's exploitation of women, you know, as like
that's not relevant.
That's not irrelevant.
That's not relevant at all.
Okay.
This kind of thing is just strip mining popular properties for iconography devoid of all context. That's the entire purpose. You know, that's the same reason like people will walk around in stormtrooper uniforms, right?
Mm-hmm.
And think it's cool. Like, I'm constantly fucking making fun of my friend who's into Star Wars for that shit. Like, yeah, you just dressing up as a space Nazi and meeting up with your space Nazi friends. Because it's just, it's empty iconography. And if you do a sexy burlesque dance as, I don't know, Calcifer from Howl's Moving Castle or shit, I don't know. Who else would be a burlesque character?
Oh.
One of the big worms from Nausicaa.
Yeah.
Lady Eboshi from Princess Mononoke.
Sure. Yeah. I was thinking the lounge singer from Porco Rosso, the one who's in love with the pig.
No, they would be the pig. You'd dress up as Piggy.
Piggy man.
You can't go too deep, right? That's the idea, is you have to go surface level. They have to be immediately recognizable,
mm-hmm.
which is why you would do Totoro, right?
Yeah. Well, that's the most iconic, I would say, just in terms of Totoro is essentially the mascot for Studio Ghibli.
Just a bunch of people stripping out of Totoro onesies. That's basically what it is.
You know, I'm imagining maybe like a layered routine. You know, you have the different size and colored Totoros. So you go from big to small as you strip off layers.
What if someone came out dressed as the Zero from The Wind Rises?
See, that's what I was getting at. I'm like, oh, Studio Ghibli. So are they gonna be doing a firebombing routine? Are they gonna talk about planes? There better be at least one act where the person is just dressed up as a plane. Because that's all Miyazaki really cared about. Having watched Kiki's Delivery Service and Porco Rosso and The Wind Rises and all of that, he just wants to draw planes. He just wanted to draw planes.
Well, and his car. He loves drawing his own car.
You know, boomers say that autism didn't exist when they were kids, and then you have 37 hours of lovingly animated plane flight by Hayao Miyazaki.
If they did have the bravery to like actually do something like that, then I would take it all back. It's not dork ass loser shit. It's in fact brave and cool. But I'm gonna need proof.
Oh boy, I guess I gotta go now.
Yeah, you know, speaking of what's your name, little girls.
Oh god, I don't like that. I don't like that segue.
Speaking of extremely inappropriate invocations of little girls, I've been reading a few different things, but one of them is Rosen Maiden.
Oh no, death.
Not to step on, I saw some other anime channels were talking about Rosen Maiden. I started reading this a long time ago, so don't come at us.
We were there when the old magic was written.
Well, not that long ago, but a little while ago. I like Rosen Maiden's fine. Rosen Maiden is good. It's actually, you know, I've read a lot of Zatch Bell and I've read a lot of Rosen Maiden at this point. I think despite being very, very much the same concept, almost exactly, I think Rosen Maiden is much better. It's better drawn, it's funnier, and it has more interesting characters for the most part. Not as much battle action. It's really kind of more about the characters.
Now, I'm gonna be upfront. I'm really unfamiliar with Rosen Maiden as a property outside of its unfortunate connection to 4chan.
Sure, yes. And the goth Lolita community.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sucks. I wish that wasn't a thing. But, you know, Rosen Maiden is not innocent, but it's not guilty of all those sins. I would say that's not entirely Rosen Maiden's fault. You know the basic premise, right? It's living dolls.
Okay, I did not know the basic premise.
You didn't even know that much.
No, is it battle dolls? Do you battle the dolls against each other?
I mean, sort of. The idea is these are, you know, those very fancy kind of like European classic dolls. The little girls with frills and all that shit.
Sure, sure.
The porcelain skin and all that shit.
Yes, I was thinking of that scene from Interview with the Vampire where Kirsten Dunst goes haywire on all the dolls.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that would be a nightmare in Rosen Maiden because the dolls are, in fact, alive.
I don't like that.
Through the power of the Rosa Mystica.
I don't like dolls, and if they have to exist, I do not want them to live.
Much like in Zatch Bell, because, again, these are almost identical in a lot of ways. The Rosen Maidens, there are seven of them, sort of, find masters, quote-unquote masters, out in the world who will wind them up, because they're like, weirdly, they're like wind-up dolls.
They're clockwork dolls.
So, well, they're not really, because once you actually wind them up, like, that's, it never really comes up again.
You only have to wind them once?
Unless they, like, use up all their magic power. But again, that does not come up,
really,
at all. It's one of those, you know, those story concepts that the author got bored of or just forgot about.
Uh-huh.
That kind of thing. Happens all the time. So the idea is they like leech life energy off the person that they choose. And they use that energy to supposedly battle their sisters in order to claim their Rosa Mysticas, which are these little like magic gems they have inside of each other, which act as their souls. And the last one standing gets to become the perfect girl.
Oh.
Whose name is Alice, by the way. There's lots of Alice in Wonderland shit in it.
But not Pinocchio.
Nope, Alice in Wonderland.
Oh, okay. All right.
I mean, yeah, there is the allusions to sort of a Geppetto-type figure, but really the Alice in Wonderland stuff is much more important. I mean, there's even like a rabbit guy travels through strange dimensions.
And who's issuing the soul here? Who is like saying that this contest is necessary for one of them to become a real doll?
Well, they're God, Jesus Christ. They make that, by the way, they make that joke in the first issue, which is very funny. It's really bad. Their creator, who they call Father, obviously, the mysterious Geppetto-like figure who never really makes an appearance in the comic,
mm-hmm.
instilled in them this sort of primal instinct to devour each other and become the one Alice. But frankly, they don't really care about that much. They kind of end up all as like, well, most of them and kind of end up as just friends who like hang out. It's fun. It's cute. It's nice. But it fit into a trend, an unfortunate trend that arose within my recent manga reading, in that much like Tokyo Ghoul, and we'll all remember, Tokyo Ghoul very famously ended.
Famously.
Very famously. Very infamously ended with the main character supposedly getting killed off and all other characters except for the one guy basically all getting slaughtered in this big final battle.
Just like the Game of Thrones books.
Kinda. And then, you know, later on, obviously, Tokyo Ghoul Part 2 came out, but nobody knew that at the time. At the time, it was like, this final chapter came out and it was like, holy shit. So he just fucking dies and that's it? Holy, oh my God. I read like 70 chapters of this fucking thing. This is it? But no, that he continued the story on. And in fact, Rosen Maiden also does a similar thing where the last chapter is our main character going like, well, time to get ready for the final battle. And then it's like the end. And then later on, there was a Rosen Maiden Part 2. But that fucking ending thing has been plaguing my recent manga reads to the point where I am starting to get like wary of it, like scared of it. Cause I read a few other things. I went back and I finally read another, the manga version, I've never watched the anime.
Okay.
You know, very infamous horror anime, right? Another.
I feel like we've talked about it. I can't quite remember the specifics of the plot.
It's the girl who wears the eye patch.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. You know.
The eye patch
girl.
It's
like the most famous eye patch girl in anime. I really can't think of another eye patch girl who would be more famous than her.
Than the girl from Another.
Yeah.
Another.
Another. Can't think of another one. That story kind of just trails off. I did not know that because I hadn't watched the anime, but I read the manga, and the story really, even for a horror story, which, you know, kind of generally ends ambiguously, even for that, the story just goes like, well, shrug anyway, yep. Moving on.
That's it. That's all, folks.
Yeah, which is disappointing because Another is a really good manga. It's a really interesting story about one of those small town curses that everybody gets fucked up over.
Sure.
Which I like. I love little small town curse stories. I'm very receptive to that kind of story.
Well, they're very, how do you say? They're very Stephen King, you know?
Sure, yeah.
That is the plot of many a Stephen King story, is a small, usually Maine or Colorado town dealing with some kind of monster or curse or existential supernatural crisis, you know?
Yeah, and there's a lot of manga as well, and just Japanese horror in general that are about small town curses. Weird rituals gone wrong.
Yeah, probably because they have all of those dilapidated small towns across the entire country.
Yeah, no, it's very fertile ground. And in fact, we're going to get a really good one. The Summer Hikaru Died.
Oh, yes. I thought that's what you were going to bring
out, up. Coming out, I think, next season or the season after that, which is one of my absolute all-time favorite small town curse stories. It's fucking great. I'm really, really excited. That one has not ended yet, so I still have hope that it'll be a great ending. But the other one I read is called You Will Hear the Voice of the Dead.
Okay. All right.
This is another horror.
This is a horror manga about Thomas Edison's ghost radio, right?
Yeah, the crystals.
Yeah.
It's this particular crystals he used. This falls in a particular tradition of a lot of horror manga. You know, I talked about 100 ghost stories of my own death, and that kind of story where it's made up of a lot of small vignettes. This starts off in a similar way where a kid who can see ghosts kind of goes on semi-contained ghost stories. He fails to save his childhood friend from a murderer, and she begins silently haunting him through the entire story.
Oh.
And generally keeps saving him from ghosts.
Oh, she's a Casper. She's a friendly ghost.
Well, she doesn't hurt him, so I guess so. She tends to help him out.
Okay, all right. That's not bad. That's not a bad deal.
No, she kind of acts as a guardian. And, you know, she defends him from the aliens, the ghosts, the conspiracies, the cults, Cthulhu at one point.
Huh.
But as the story goes on, it slowly congeals into an actual narrative, which, you know, these things tend to do if they go on long enough. And it starts coming to a head. It's, you know, builds on itself to the point where the main character has been recruited into an army of psychics to take on the end of the world. You know, that kind of thing.
Sure. Escalation.
yeah. And this kid went from a kid who can kind of sense ghosts and gets a nosebleed when psychic things are happening to essentially like Mob from Mob Psycho.
He just becomes a psychic juggernaut.
Yeah, he's like an all-powerful psychic juggernaut. There's lots of really fun characters. I love the ingenuity in a lot of the kind of more self-contained stories. It's really fun. It's really weird. There's lots of great, like, scary horror gore shit. It's fantastic. But like these other ones I was just talking about, you get to the final chapter and the character is like, well, it's time to go to the final battle. And then you go to the next page and it's like the end. And I cannot tell you how fucking infuriating that is.
No, I get it. I get it. It's very much the same in a lot. It's not just these. It's like all manga. Manga apparently is like sketch comedy where nobody knows how to write an ending.
No one can end it.
Because in, like, you know, in rom-com stuff as well, you know, there's a plague of stuff just kind of either ending right after the confession or trying...
Which is the better choice.
Which is the better choice, I suppose. If you're going to do it that way, you might as well just end it there, because what's the fucking point?
Yeah.
But then there's also the big names. You've got your, you know, Sono Bisky Dolls, your Nagatoros, your Uzaki-chans.
Sure.
Who all tried to continue onward post-confession until they just kind of sputtered out, and then the author unceremoniously announces that, hey guys, by the way, next chapter is the last one. Hope you enjoyed the ride.
Yep.
Yeah.
Now, I imagine in most of those scenarios, they're getting canceled, right?
So, I don't know. I don't know what the scenario is there. I think that at least for the case of Sono Bisky Doll, which I was following up until the end, the author, you know, in their social media postings basically made pretty heavy allusions to the fact that drawing this comic was killing them, but Shueisha wanted them to keep making chapters anyway.
Yeah.
And so they're like, yeah, you know what? I finally, they basically said, like, yeah, I finally talked with my agent and, for the good of my health, like, we're ending it. We're just going to end it. Sorry.
Yeah.
I had more stuff that I wanted to tell, with these characters, but I'm literally dying. So, I have to stop.
Yeah. Another case of the industry just robbing us of somebody who has talent and interest in doing their work, and it just gets ground into dust.
You know,
this happens so often.
Yeah.
It's really disheartening.
Well, in the case of the Nagatoro author, it's because he wanted to go back to drawing porn, for the most part.
Well, I've made my money. I'm going to get out now.
Yeah, basically. I got that Shueisha check.
Yeah, get the bag, I guess. But this happens so often. Those are the ones that really infuriate me, because I feel like, in the effort of trying to seem mysterious, you know, and ambiguous, they really kind of shirk their responsibility to, like, put a button on their own narrative. I'm more forgiving for stories that get unceremoniously dumped and the last chapter just has to kind of get thrown out.
Sure.
You know, things like Machi and Oboro just got canceled and had to throw out, like, their last chapter. It only hit 26. And the last chapter really is one of those things where it's like the characters are just like, hey, we had a really fun time hanging out. I love you. And then it's like the end. One of Shueisha's recent comics, I might have talked about this, Runaway Darling, which is like a kind of New York in the 40s Art Deco crime story, got canceled after like almost 20 chapters and just had to be like, well, and then the characters left the city and had a life. Just like, god damn, this fucking sucks.
It's
Reign
like
of the Seven Spellblades is something I read recently that only, like, it got like 40 chapters in, and then the author literally inserted a page going like, well, there's way more to the story, but I can't just keep doing this, so sorry, they're not gonna pay me to write more of this. So I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, comics in general, you know, the economy, man, the economy.
Yeah.
The stock market for comics is way down.
It's not good. And it really hurts when it's people like, a recent, like, really, an artist who shot up my list of favorite manga artists. His name is Shinkawa Gombe.
Please, I'm American. You cannot use the term shot up around me without bringing up traumatic feelings.
He rose up the charts.
Thank you.
Top of the pops. Shinkawa Gombe, I really, really like. His art is fantastic, and the stories he gets attached to, I think, are really interesting. But every single thing he works on gets canceled, like, before 20 chapters. Every single thing this guy has done. And, like, his stories he was licensed to, stories that he had a writer attached to, adaptations he's done, all of them Every single one canceled.
Brutal.
It breaks my heart.
Well, it makes him poised to be the to take on a Van Gogh legacy, right?
He's gonna self-mutilate.
Well, maybe once he self-mutilates and then commits suicide, his artwork will become 10 times more valuable.
Yeah, but imagine if Van Gogh had just decided to like not finish his paintings. It's just like, well, my patron isn't going to give me any more money for paint, so I'm just going to like stop painting. That's kind of more what these are like, you know what I mean?
Well, it's an unfortunate side effect of the like production
of liking manga.
Of liking manga, yeah. We have to deal with these damn lazy artists who aren't able to finish the job, right?
They're stealing these stories from me, the rightful owner of them.
Well, I mean, that is kind of the mentality that these publishers assume, right? You are signing up to create a product that we're going to sell by putting it in our magazine and on our website. And boy, howdy, you better sell.
It's absolutely insane that they could have a business model that makes like early 2000s web comics look like a smart investment.
Hey, Twitter comics today look like a better investment. You see what some of these guys pull in on Patreon?
I know the Patreon figures. I'm watching the Patreon boards. I know. But that's very small, subset of these guys.
Sure.
The titans of comic industry.
All hail the political Twitter cartoonist.
Not all of us can be Odas or Hiromu Arakawas. getting paid to just do character designs on Netflix animes, you know. Very few of us are ever going to make it to that level.
God, we can only hope.
Most of us are just going to dwell in obscurity and write, you know, a third of a manga and then decide that this industry sucks shit and never draw anything again. That's going to be the vast majority.
That's why I strictly decided to stay on the consumer side of the fight. That way, I always come out on top.
Obviously, your art is good enough to be published and serialized even, but you know, you're just holding it back for your own personal use.
Yeah, no, it's for me. I'm like George Lucas. I just make my little movies, make my little comics that I keep to myself, and no, you can't see them. Yes, I do have a girlfriend that lives in Canada.
You think George Lucas is making his own Star Wars movies and not showing them to anybody?
I don't think they're Star Wars movies, but that's what he says in every interview since he sold Star Wars to Disney. They're like, hey, George, what are you doing now? He's like, oh, well, I just make a little... He calls them experimental films in the interviews that I've seen. It's like, I just make my little experimental films and show them to my friends up at Skywalker Ranch. And, you know, I don't have any intention of trying to make any more big budget Hollywood movies. I'm done. You guys drove me out of town.
He saw what happened to Spielberg and he's like, I'm not going down that path.
Oh, man. Okay, can I tell you about something that I watched? Because I'm still on that spring anime 2025 Season of the Witch kick.
Yeah, tell me about some anime that'll have incredibly disappointing endings.
Oh, God. I mean, I can already tell with all of these, basically. But I did get around to watching Your Forma.
Oh, good. Great. Your Forma.
Your Forma. Not mine. Not
your
theirs.
Forma.
Not his. Not hers. Yours.
And we've definitely confirmed that it is not You Are Forma.
No, it is you were.
It's the possessive.
Yeah,
it's
it is
your,
the possessive.
It's the possessive your.
Y-O-U-R, no apostrophe E, Your Forma, which turns out is just... So you're familiar with, like, Ghost in the Shell, right?
Yeah, pretty familiar, I guess.
And you know how they have those cables, like what in the Matrix, that they can plug into the back of their heads?
Oh, the Matrix. Now that's something I'm really familiar with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
that's it. That's what the Your Forma is. It's the Game Boy Kinect cable, but for people's brains.
So they connect to each other?
Well, they connect to robots that look like sexy people. I'm getting ahead of myself. It's Blade Runner. It's just Blade Runner. It's Blade Runner.
It's Blade Runner.
It's just Blade Runner.
It's Blade Runner, but with a Game Boy Link cable.
Yeah, exactly. So in the future, our story centers around a cop, which, again, is honestly another entry in a troubling trend of cyberpunk in anime, like being cop-centric, cop-focused, police-pilled, if you will.
Yes.
It's not, and it is about a... You know, an agent Starling, but instead of Hannibal Lecter's, she hunts down robots who have link cable access in the back of their heads.
Uh-huh.
And in this semi-futuristic, it's not specific what year it's taking place in, but it has a degree of advanced technology.
20XX.
Yeah, 20XX. It is serviceably transposable onto modern, like, day city life, but with the added presence of human-like robots that are manned by somewhat not perfect but human-like AI, you know.
Sure. man bots and fembots.
And so the central mystery is we have our Agent Starling and her Watson bot, her Robo Watson, like from the hit cartoon Sherlock Holmes in the 22nd century, as we all grew up watching.
A Robo Trader.
Yeah. A Robo Race Trader.
Yeah.
And he's a sexy blonde Jude Law man, but a robot.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I remember when Jude Law was a robot.
Yeah. Remember that?
Yeah.
And it's a murder mystery about the specific model of this police detective Jude Law bot. Different, I don't know what you call them, instances of this bot, because they all share a face and a personality. Different units of this robot line have started to go haywire and are killing the people around them.
You are describing both the Animatrix sequence about the rise of the machines and iRobot.
Yeah. Oh, it's very iRobot.
It's exactly the same plot.
It is exactly iRobot, to the point where they make up their own fake version of Asimov's Rules for Robotics. Although they call
them... They love doing that.
Except for some reason they title them the Rules of Respect in this, which
oh god, that's so condescending.
Yeah, I do not like it.
God.
It makes me feel very bad.
That's awful.
But you know, the basic plot setup is they come to decommission this police bot Jude Law because all of the other ones have started, you know, at separate occasions going insane and trying to murder somebody. And our Agent Starling character is like, no, he's my special robot. He's definitely not one of the ones that's going to go psycho and kill people.
Yeah, he's one of the good ones.
Oh, God. And she's like, all right, police commissioner, don't decommission, because that's what the police commissioner is in charge of. He's in charge of commissioning and decommissioning the robots.
Yeah.
The police decommissioner is like, I'm going to decommission your bot. And she's like, no. And he's like, all right, but you got to solve this case before I decommission your bot. You know, for the good of the royalty, because I don't think that it takes place in the UK, but they are talking about reporting directly to some enigmatic royal family.
So this is a monarchy? This is a cyberpunk monarchy?
So the two locations in the first episode, at least, keep alternating between St. Petersburg in modern-day Russia and London.
Very famously not a monarchy.
Yeah, and London. So I guess they are talking about the British monarchy. They're British cops, the worst kind of cops outside of America. God.
Bobbies. They're bobbies.
Yeah. Well, they're cyber detective bobbies.
They're Scotland Yard bobbies.
Mm-hmm. So
gross.
Yeah, it doesn't like do a whole lot for me. As I mentioned, it is just wholesale cobbled together of different kind of milquetoast cyberpunk tropes that you find in your run-of-the-mill Blade Runner knockoffs, your cyberpunks, sure. your Metallic Rouges. Actually, Metallic Rouge, I think, is a step above this just because of the fact that all of the robots need super heroin to live and people, like, steal yeah. it from them.
Which that is kick-ass.
Is kick-ass, is the best part of that entire show.
It's
that,
like, so singular fucking plot stupid. Point. It's so dumb, but it kind of kicks ass. It definitely kicks ass.
This doesn't even have that. They just have, like, she's a human, although she does have cybernetic upgrades because she's a cop, obviously.
You gotta, yeah.
And she has a robot Watson, and the setup is in each episode they are going from location to location, talking to suspects and talking to, like, victims, and occasionally at the end of the episode they do a you know, a Game Boy Link with the suspect or the victim to try and parse through their memories and do, like, a, you know, they just straight up call them brain dives, like in Cyberpunk.
Yeah.
So, and it, what was that game, that French, I think it was a French produced studio, that was essentially like, you're a cyber spy and you're,
it's called Remember.
Yeah. Remember. it's basically that game where she dives into people's memories and tries to reconstruct a scenario based off of clues and snippets of what they saw and heard, right?
Yeah.
And then she relays that information to her robot Watson, who's definitely not going to get brain hacked. And then, you know, they kind of piece together a scenario, and that leads them to another clue. Until eventually, I assume, they're just going to forget about finding the villain, and it's just going to putter out without really concluding anything.
Sounds like the kind of thing that would eventually build up to some kind of conspiracy.
Yeah.
Like they usually do.
Oh, I'm sure there's a conspiracy. They've already shown a shadowy man behind a two-way mirror. So, like, you have to assume.
Oh, God. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. Once they got the shadowy guy behind the mirror, it's pretty much locked in.
I mean, if he was smoking a cigarette, I would have been like, all right, I'm out. I know where this is going.
Yeah.
I know exactly what's going on here.
He was hitting a cyber cigarette.
Yeah. Different from vapes.
Yeah.
Like, no, this is a digital cigarette. It's not a vape.
You know what I really like? That one trend of the brain dive. It's pretty stupid usually. And it's stupid in this one too. But that anime, ID Invaded, or ID Invaded.
Right, I remember that.
Yeah, which I actually really like the way they did that. It's even stupider though, because they can get into people's brains by, like, picking up their, like, biological material at the crime scene and, like, plugging that into a machine to simulate the entire person.
Wow.
And then the guy goes into the simulated mind and, like, tracks down all of their I guess their tells. Which is dumb as hell, but I like it because the main character is a Hannibal. Mm-hmm. He's a guy on death row that is the only one who's, like, psychologically fucked up enough to go into these serial killers' brains.
Oh, he's The Cell. He's Vince Vaughn in The Cell.
Yeah, but also, and here's the wrinkle I really like, that I wish they took this into other things. When you go into these brain dives, you forget who you are.
Oh, you become part of their subconscious.
Well, when you go into it, there is a pre-built construct personality that you have to essentially get into, assume. And that person is essentially being born every single time he goes into one of these scenarios. And I think that is so fucking cool. So every time he does it, it starts with this guy going, "Who am I? Oh, I'm a detective. What am I doing here? I must be detecting because I'm a detective. I wonder what's happening." And then he, like, does the detection and then dies, because that's what happens to these constructs inside of these brain dives. That shit is fucking cool.
Well, you see,
cool.
That was probably created by a person who had an ounce of originality in their concept.
Like, maybe, I guess. I just really like that. That thing is cool.
It's fun.
One detail is fun.
It's always brought up questions to me, and of like the practicality of having a technology like that. And I think that what I'm talking about is better illustrated in something like in Baldur's Gate 3, you know, you have the talk to dead ability spell.
Yeah.
It's like, why? Okay, if you can just go in and read a person's memories and see like the last thing that they saw before they died, or you can just straight up ask a copy of their personality, like, hey, what happened? What were you doing that day? What do you remember? It kind of, it makes the detective work less impressive.
Yeah.
It's like, come on, what are you doing? Why do we need you? Just send that shit to the lab. They'll analyze it.
Yeah, just put it into the cybercrime computer.
Yeah.
Spit out your killer answer.
Okay, so one final thing about Yorforma, just kind of answer your original question.
Sure.
The Yorforma is technically the brain Ethernet port that everybody gets in the back of their neck. That's the Yorforma. Yeah. Yorforma is the little plug hole that the Game Boy cable goes into and lets you do a sexy mind meld with your hot Jude Law bot.
Sure. Which I assume you're doing all the time.
Oh, yeah. Well, they had to make a law, obviously, to make sure that people weren't fucking their Jude Law bots all the time, because we'd all be doing it.
How do they keep gunk out of there?
That's a good question. I assume maybe they have to like spray in industrial electronic contact cleaner. Maybe blow it out with some dust air. Maybe they have a little cap or something that plugs into it, and it costs like $500 to reorder from the Bionetics. Like doctor, if you lose it, you know, like reordering stylus sticks for a DS.
I feel like that is one of the most overlooked aspects of all these like body port things is like, well, how do you keep that shit clean? Because you know that's going to get gross.
Oh, it's going to get fudgy. It's going to get grody. It's going to get some fuzz, some lint stuck in there. Someone's gonna plug in and it's gonna give like a brain melting error because the connections were corroded.
Yeah, the second you spill juice on that thing, it's game over.
Oh no, I got cranberry juice into my spinal cord.
Yeah, well, I'm dead.
Is that bad?
I'm fucking dead. There it goes.
So yeah, fuck cops. I don't like cops.
What sounds great. Love it. It sounds so awesome.
Well, I did watch one other thing. The final entry, I think, in what we've been calling the 2025 spring anime season of The Witch. The final witch anime that they released this season.
The final witch.
Yeah.
The last witch, as Vin Diesel once warned us of.
That's right. He was the last witch, and Nicolas Cage was the witch hunter. I think that was the witch hunting movie he was in. I think it was just called Witch Hunter.
Was it just called Witch Hunter?
I think so, yeah. Or maybe it was also called Season of the Witch.
It might have been.
God.
All I know is Vin Diesel was the last witch hunter.
But not the last witcher. That was Henry Cavill.
He wasn't even the last one, okay?
Oh, there's been a more recent witcher?
Well, there were younger witchers than him. They were the sand witchers.
Oh, I'm talking strictly about screen performance.
He wasn't the first and he won't be the last. Mark my words.
No, I watched Maebashi Witches.
Cool.
No, it's not that cool. It's
oh.
Yeah. I don't know exactly where this is landing in terms of who the main demographic is. It is very much set up as a corporate cash grab knockoff of the aesthetics of like a Cardcaptor Sakura, Pretty Cure, something like that. Your standard magical girl, like wish fulfillment anime.
Sure.
But it's also still very much focused at guys who watch animes just to see different types of girl, like we talked about in the last episode with the gotcha stuff.
Sure.
Which they even make a joke about in this one. It's about a team of magical girls who are witches, quote unquote, but really they're just regular magical girls. And a magic frog gathers them in a little pocket dimension and says, hey, I'm making you all witches so that you can grant people wishes.
Okay.
Which is the
witch wish.
Yeah, it's a witch wisher. And you know, the joke kind of at the beginning is they all have different personalities. They're all different types of girl, and they all have their quirks and their stuff to overcome. And at first, boy, it's hard to work as a team because they don't get along, especially the one character whose entire personality is that, like, she's just the bitch witch. She's a bitchy witch.
And she keeps fucking up the choreography.
Kinda. There is a lot of choreography, a lot of pop songs being sung.
Great.
Cool. Because that is how they do magic in the show. They kind of magically change into idol costumes and then sing a pop song, and that gives the teen
girl.
Okay,
so they are idol band.
Yeah, they're an idol band.
Yeah.
They're an idol band, and their manager is a magic frog who kidnapped them and forced them into this position.
Yeah, like that monolith one you watched.
Yeah, that one was more interesting. I wanted to see where the monolith came from. What did the monolith want?
Monoliths are cooler than frogs, even though I like frogs. Everybody's got to agree.
Yeah. So, you know, basically just not a lot of substance to this one. We have our five different types of girl. We've got
all five.
Yeah, all five.
Damn.
We have the main girl, and her thing is that, you know, she's energetic and plucky, but sometimes she's kind of clumsy. You know how it is.
I know how it is.
And then you have the older one, who is mature and has her own apartment and doesn't live with her parents.
Uh-huh. And she's kind of maternal.
Yeah, and she's kind of maternal. And you have the one who is also pretty clumsy, but like much more so. And she's much more ditzy as well. She's kind of like the airheaded
right.
one. And can
gotcha.
You guess what color her hair is?
Is it pink or blonde?
Yeah, she's the blonde one who wears pink.
Gotcha.
And then you have the one who the blonde one also, like, her quirk is that she likes to give cutesy nicknames to everybody that she meets.
Gotta.
Yeah, so, you know, that's a type of girl. And then you have the one who's just there, who she's kind of like the background girl. She's kind of like the level-headed one, but you know, not maternal. She's just kind of like friendly and just like, yeah, that I think that's a good idea. That, like, that's her purpose, is to stand there and agree with the main character.
Does she have glasses?
She does have glasses and a bob cut.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah,
she's the one in the group who's just standing there. I want to see what he does. He hasn't done anything yet.
Yeah, exactly.
He's just standing there.
Come on, you know it's gonna be good. And then finally you have the bitchy one, and her thing is that she's from a rich family, right? And she wants to be the main character, but the magical frog decided that our main character is the main character, and she's pissed off about that because
sure.
She's rich. And also is angry all the time because of being rich and being not the main character. And you know, and she doesn't want to cooperate, but then they sing a song and it makes her see the value in cooperating, and then they do. And then this is actually, you know, interesting enough, kind of like the death of a witch. Death of a Sales Witch anime. where they have to complete a certain amount of life-changingly positive deeds upon the inhabitants of this small town. But unlike that one, where the Sword of Damocles hanging over the main character's head was that if she didn't get 100 tears of joy, she would literally die horribly in 1 year.
Yeah. And go to hell.
This one, they have to collect 100,000 witch points by granting wishes. And the value of the wish they grant is determined by an indeterminate number of factors, including how much joy they spark and how well they did at customer service while they were doing it.
Great. Cool. Yet another one that just spawns so many philosophical questions that just will never be answered.
And so the
pure ideology,
pureness ideology.
Ideology.
And so this one, really, the conflict is that they're only allowed. So they have this like pocket dimension that presents as a flower shop.
Yeah.
That can be entered from, multiple different doorways throughout the city.
Right.
It's kind of like one of those magical realism things where, you know, you walk into a shop you've never seen before and suddenly it's this amazing flower shop, and when you try to go back the next day it's not there, kind of thing.
Sure, of course.
And their whole thing is that they can only use their magic inside the shop until they get 100,000 witch points, at which point they can go outside and grant wishes outside of the flower shop.
Yeah, but why would they want to do that if they had already reached their quota?
Well, you know, my theory is because being witches in a society where being a witch is like strictly genetic and matrilineal, they should go out and conquer the world of men.
You are very fixated on that.
It only makes sense. It only makes sense to me.
If you live in a world full of normies and you've discovered the power to change reality, the first thing you should do is enslave the earth.
You know, you gotta find your limits somewhere. And I feel like making it your mission to enslave humanity kind of defines pretty well what your limitations are gonna be, right?
This is, you are one of the bad guys in that serial killer isekai. You're like, it was only natural once I got my magical powers to conquer this entire world.
You know what? Some of us got to dream big. You know, get the gold, get that bag. I don't know what you want from me. I am only doing what I feel Darwin would want me to do if he were alive and watching anime today.
Pure ideology.
So yeah, I don't know. It's another long line of like this magical girl kind of philosophy of like servitude towards the community at the cost of what is essentially a little like a little girl's well-being
and childhood.
I'm assuming at some point they're going to have to like fight monsters, right? Or bad guys, because isn't that what magical girls do?
You know, sometimes they do. Sometimes they just fight negative emotions.
Sure. And then on top of that, that is, you know, just looking at it through the lens of magical girls, because on the witch side, it's like very common for the witch profession in anime culture to be seen as kind of like this, like a town apothecary kind of figure, or a helpful, quirky person, right? You know,
yeah, the herbalist.
Yeah, witches are people who just kind of do free labor for their community because that's what you should do if you have magic powers. I disagree with that. I think that you should poison and subjugate the community because of your earthbending, like reality warping powers. Maybe that's just me. I don't know. But anime witches have not caught up to me yet.
What you're confusing is you think it's about the power, whereas what you are describing is a woman who has become an old maid. And, you know, a patriarchal society demands that an old maid should be relegated to the forest to do quirky things like medicine.
Okay, but it's not just old maids, because we've got lots of young witches. It's like the whole purpose of being a witch is to go and set up a witch shop in some town. You know, you got your Kiki's delivery service, basically setting the template for that.
Sure, sure. But once you have a young romance, you lose all your powers.
Is that how it works in every... witch mythos? If you fall in love with anyone but the devil, you lose your powers.
I mean, pretty much, right? I mean, the whole thing is about sort of like, I mean, the magical girl thing certainly is about a maiden's purity, mm-hmm. which is why it lines up so perfectly with the whole idol thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the witch thing in this is very, very underplayed. It is mostly about being a magical idol. Who gets to sing a song that resolves people's issues at the end of the episode.
Yeah.
Right? You know, it like, okay, so the first episode, it also takes this weird stance of like, maybe witches shouldn't use their powers to help people in direct, meaningful ways. Because, like, the first episode, the conflict is a girl who is fighting with her parents because they don't want to pay for her to go to medical school, but she wants to be a doctor. And they keep trying to convince her to go to community college nearby so that she can get some office job and, like, pay for them to be older shit.
Okay.
And they establish that they have the ability to get her into whatever medical college she wants for free. They can just make money with their magic. They say that.
Cool.
They can just make money. But they settle on, actually, what we need to do is sing her a pep talk song so that she can go out and go to medical school on her own and pay for it without anybody's help because she's so motivated.
Yeah, well, she doesn't want handouts from the magical witch girls. That would be insulting.
That's literally what they say. They say, no, we shouldn't make this girl tons and tons of magical money because what she really needs is to learn the value of hard work and self-motivation.
Yeah. It's like a thing I've seen in a bunch of manga where a character develops the power to, I don't know, materialize things out of thin air. But when somebody's like, why don't you make money? They're like, well, I don't want to crash the economy.
No, we must preserve the economy at all costs.
That's more important than my own well-being. Sounds a lot like Symphogears, but without the battling.
Which one was Symphogears?
That's the one where magical girls use the power of song to defeat aliens.
Yeah, well, if any aliens show up, it'll be more like that. At this point, it's more like wannabe idol band is advertising free labor in return for exposure.
Exposure in the form of Wishcoin.
Yeah, Wishcoin. Yeah, they're promoting their new witch-based Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Witchcoin. Witchcoin.
Witchcoin.
Witch.
I bet there is
coin.
A witchcoin.
Oh, definitely. And I bet there's a witchcoin too.
I'm gonna really quick, let me just convert all my Ethereum into witchcoin. Wow.
So yeah, I don't like it. I didn't like it. I think that was unfortunately a real bad note to end the season of The Witch on. Maybe I gotta go farther back. Maybe I have to make my own season of The Witch, and I have to go start watching all of the past witch anime to figure out what the hell's going on.
Okay. Well, let's put together a little lineup. Obviously, you got Witchblade on there.
Mm-hmm.
Witch Hunter Robin.
Okay, obviously.
Yeah. Kiki's Delivery Service. Can't skip that one. That's a witch.
Do a quick search. Earwig and the Witch, the much maligned Gorō Miyazaki production from Ghibli.
Sure. I guess. I don't know if I'd put that on there, but why not?
What else? Strike Witches? Oh, no.
Oh, sure. Yeah, why not Strike Witches? Sure, throw that one on. Why not?
The Witcher anime, Nightmare of the Wolf.
That's not an anime.
Well, that's what it says. It's called The Witcher anime.
I don't want to get into that, but The Witch and the Beast, which is my favorite, obviously. I wish that had
Little Witch Academia
had never gone on hiatus. Yes. Little Witch Academia.
I'm thinking I already watched Burn the Witch, which is the Bleach spin-off series or OVA.
Sure. They did not burn though.
They did not burn any witches.
They did not burn.
Flying Witch, which I guess is an anime. The Ancient Magus's Bride. He's a witch. In that one, guys can be witches.
He is not a witch. He is a magus. Yeah. That's very different. Ichi the Witch is a witch.
Okay, all right.
But he is a magus. You can't get around that one.
What about Mushoku Tensei? Someone saying that's a witch anime.
Is it? I thought there was kind of a sci-fi thing in that. Studio Ponoc did a witch movie a little while back called Mary and the Witch's Flower. I'm not sure if Mary was a witch, but it's got witch in the title, so it's got to count, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'll give it to it.
Yeah.
If it's got witch in the title, then it has to count.
Sure. Yeah, why not?
Speaking of, Witch from Mercury.
Witch from Mercury, of course.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't magic, but they were witches.
Soul Eater had some witches in it.
Did it?
Yeah, one of the main, like sub-villains, a recurring sub-villain was a witch lady. Remember?
I do not remember. I remember a girl who had a little sentient sword.
She had a scythe.
See, I can't even remember that part.
I'll do some more research. There's got to be more witch anime out there. I'm positive of it. I'll find out. I'll put together a definitive list.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Are you going to do all of them or just good ones?
Oh, God, I guess.
Because you named a lot of bad ones.
I named a lot of bad ones. Well, I guess I'll just have to figure that out as I go, won't I? Which ones are good and which ones are bad?
You know, frankly, if you want to find the good ones, you really have to go back to like the 70s and 80s when they were like actual witches.
Oh,
who were
sure.
Doing, like,
well, that's
Macbeth
Japan
shit.
Had its been it had its obsession with Bewitched, which was the first, witch rom-com anime.
Sure. Yeah. Witch rom-com anime. Of course. Yeah.
I do actually, you know what? I am going to add that to the list. I don't know if you know, there was a late 90s, early 2000s Japanese television remake of Bewitched with a Japanese cast. I've always meant to find those episodes and watch some of it.
You're going
to
go watch that?
Yeah. I'll go watch the Japanese live action adaptation of Bewitched.
I would be very interested in what you thought of that. Is Bayonetta a witch?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, if we're getting into video games, then, you know, we got Bayonetta, we've got Blade Witch, other witch-based titles.
yeah, you know, other witch-based titles.
That transphobic Harry Potter game?
Sure, yeah. Well, Witch Hat Atelier is not out yet, but that will be getting a trans adaptation next year,
uh-huh.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
Is it next year? It might be next year.
I think it's next year, yeah.
I'm very excited for that. Witch Hat Atelier is very good.
That'll be a fun one. Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, kind of the one that inspired all of this.
Yeah, obviously. Mm-hmm. I think it's either the third or the fourth Silent Night, Deadly Night is about a witch's coven.
Oh, that would be Silent Night, Deadly Night 4, the one with Ron.
Yeah.
No, not Ron Howard. The other one, the ugly one, Clint Howard.
Yeah, Clint Howard's in it as a deranged janitor.
No, he's a homeless man. He's a homeless man who is the, he's like a fucked up bug monster that works for the witches.
Sure, yeah. Man, mm-hmm. That movie kicks ass. Those movies rock.
Oh, boy. Hey, go watch Silent Night, Deadly Night. Just all of them. They're all great.
Yeah, watch all of them.
Yeah.
In a row.
Not even around Christmas. Just do it right now.
The only Christmas-related ones are the first two. None of the other ones have anything to do with Christmas.
No, that's not true. The third one does still technically take place around Christmas, but it's overshadowed by the fact that that's the one where Bill Moseley plays the main guy. I can't remember the character's name, but the murderer from the second one. And B, the top of his head has been chopped off and replaced with a brain dome.
Yes, that rules so hard. I love that so much. The movie kicks ass.
But it does take place around Christmas specifically because I have the image burned into my head of like him murdering people with like cheap 80s tinsel wrapped around his brain dome head while it's bleeding like down his face.
That's so cool. Oh my god, that shit is so cool.
All right.
You know what? That movie and Slumber Party Massacre 2 would just be a very fun night. A mm-hmm. very fun night. Man, I want to watch some horror
Hell
movies.
Hell yeah. Go watch that. Don't watch anime. Watch horror movies.
Yeah. Final Destination out now.
Wasn't there a Paranormal Activity about witches?
Yeah, they're all about witches.
They're all about witches.
Because it turns out that all of the paranormal activity is being caused by a coven of witches who are trying to bring Toby into the real world through a series of children.
Man, that's so cool.
It's pretty cool. Those movies rock.
Yeah, go watch those.
Yeah.
All right, I think that does it for me this week. Handsome, beautiful,
and that
tall
does
listeners.
It for anime.
Yeah, anime's over. We finished it. We finished anime.
And that's anime. Next season, let's let's turn our eyes to next season. Because that's pretty much anime.
Yeah.
Next season, we're going to have some great shit, though. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned. You know, you're going to love it. Am I right?
I'm genuinely excited.
All right, everybody. Hey, tip your waiters. Tip the wait staff. They work hard.
All right. I guess we'll hand it over to the afternoon programming.
Okay. Go do the stuff. Instagram.
Do the stuff.
TikTok. TikTok. Email us. Email us. We love the email.
Email us. Call the Google voice voicemail. Leave us a voice message.
We finally got the phone tree set up. all right. Until next week.
All right.
Bye. You know,
you,